Chapter 38. "What do you mean you killed her?" Zebra asked, the five of us still studying the grotesque tableau of Dominica's death. "That's not what I said," I answered. "I said Tana Mirabel killed her."
"And you are?"
Chantrell said. "If I told you, I'm not completely sure you'd believe me. As a matter of fact, I'm having a little trouble dealing with it myself." Pransky, who had been listening to our exchange, raised his voice and spoke with solemn surety. "Dominica's still warm, and rigor mortis hasn't set in yet. If your whereabouts can be accounted for over the last few hours, which I suspect is strongly the case, you're hardly a prime suspect." Zebra tugged at my sleeve. "What about the two people I said were after you, Tanner? They acted like outsiders, according to Dominica. They might have killed her for snitching about them." "I don't even know who they are," I said. "At least I can't be sure. Not about the woman, anyway. But I'm willing to hazard a guess about the man."
"Who do you think it is?" Zebra said.
Quirrenbach cut in. "I really don't think we should spend too long here. Not unless you want to tangle with what passes for authority here. And believe me, that's not especially high on my agenda."
"Much as it grieves me to agree with him," Chantrell said, "he has a fairly good point, Tanner."
"I don't think you should call me that anymore," I said. Zebra shook her head slowly.
"Who do we call you, then?"
"Not Tanner Mirabel, anyway." I nodded at Dominica's body. "It must have been Mirabel who killed her. The man who's following me is Mirabel. He did this, not me."
"This is insane," Chantrell said,
to general nods of agreement, although no one much looked like they were enjoying proceedings.
"If you're not Tanner Mirabel, then who are you?"
"A man called Kaweya," I said, knowing that this was only half of the truth. Zebra placed her hands against her hips. "And you didn't feel like telling any of us this until now?"
"Until recently, I didn't realize it."
"No, just slipped your mind, did it?" I shook my head. "I think Kaweya altered my memories, his memories, to suppress his own identity. He needed to do it temporarily, to escape from Sky's Edge. His own memories and face would have incriminated him. Except when I say he, I mean me, really." Zebra squinted at me, as if trying to tell if her earlier judgments had been fatally incorrect.
"You actually believe this, don't you?"
"It's taken me a little while to come to terms with it, believe me."
"He's clearly snipped," Quirrenbach said. "The odd thing is, I assumed it would take rather more than the sight of one dead fat woman to push him over the edge."
I punched him. It was quick. I allowed him no warning at all, and in any case, under the permanent threat of Chantrell's gun, he was in no position to fight back. I watched him fall, slipping on the floor, which was slick with some spilled medical fluid, one hand rising to nurse his jaw before he even hit the ground. Quirrenbach slipped into the shadow beneath the couch, yelping as he made contact with something. For a moment I wondered if he had touched a snake which had found its way to the floor, but instead something much larger emerged from the shadow. It was Dominica's kid, Tom. I reached a hand out towards him.
"Come here.
You're safe with us." She had been killed by the same man who had visited her before, asking questions about me. An off-worlder, yes. "Much like you," Tom said, casually at first, and then repeating himself in a tone that was altogether more suspicious. Not just much like Tanner, but very like him indeed. "It's all right," I said, putting a hand on his shoulder. "The man who killed Dominica only looked like me. It doesn't mean I'm him." Tom nodded his head slowly.
"You no sound like him."
"He talked differently."
"You talk fancy, mister. The other man, the man who look like you, he don't use so many words."
"The strong, silent type," Zebra said. Then she drew the kid away from me, wrapping her long, lean limbs around him protectively. I was touched for a moment. It was the first time I had seen any hint of compassion shown by someone from the canopy for a mulchborn. The first time I had seen any hint that either party regarded the other as human. Of course I knew what Zebra believed, that the game was evil. But it was another matter to see that belief acted out in a simple gesture of giving comfort.
"We're sorry about Dominica," she said. "You have to believe it wasn't us."
Tom sniffed. He was upset, but the shock of her death had yet to set in, and he was still reasonably coherent and eager to help us. At least I hoped it was because the shock had not set in. The other possibility, that he was just immunized against that kind of pain, was too unpleasant to contemplate. I could handle it in a soldier, but not in a kid. "Was he alone?" I asked. "I was told that two people were looking for me, a man and a woman. Do you know if this was the same man?"
"Same guy,"
the kid said, turning his face away from the suspended corpse of Dominica. "And he not alone this time either. Woman with him, but she no look happy this time." "She looked happy the first time," I said.
"Not happy, but..."
The kid faltered, and I could see that we were making unreasonable demands on his vocabulary.
"She look like she comfortable with guy, like friends. He nicer then. More like you."
It made sense. The first time he'd paid a trip to Dominica's would have been a fishing trip, gathering what information he could about the city and, hopefully, where he could find the man he wanted to kill, whether the man was me or Rivich or both of us. It might have made sense to kill Dominica there and then, but he must have suspected she could be of use to him in the future. So he had let her live, until he returned, with the snakes he must have bought in the bazaar. And then he had killed her in a manner which he knew would speak to me, a private code of ritual murder which opened seams into the heart of my being. "The woman," I said, "she was off-world too?" But Tom seemed no wiser than I about that. Using Zebra's phone, I called Laurent, the pig whose kitchen I had half destroyed during my descent from the canopy an eternity ago. I told him I had a final huge favor to ask of him and his wife, which was only that they look after Tom until things quieten down. "A day," I said, although in truth I plucked the figure from my head at random.
"I look after myself," Tom said. "No one stay with pig."
"They're good people, trust me. You'll be much safer there. If word gets out that someone witnessed Dominica being killed, the same man will come back. If he finds you, he'll kill you," I said.
"I always got to hide?"
"No," I said, "only for as long as it takes for me to kill the man who did this. And believe me, I'm not planning on spending the rest of my life doing it." The concourse was still quiet when we left the tent, meeting the pig and his wife just beyond the cataract of greasy rain, which fell endlessly down the building's overhung side, like a curtain of yellowing calico. The kid went with them, nervously at first, but then Laurent scooped him aboard, and their balloon-wheeled vehicle vanished into the murk like an apparition. "He'll be safe, I think," I said.
"You think he's in that much danger?"
Quirrenbach said. "More than you can imagine. The man who killed Dominica isn't exactly overburdened with a conscience."
"You'll sound like you know him."
"I do," I said. Then we returned to Chantrell's car.
"I'm confused,"
Quirrenbach said, as he climbed into the vehicle's bubble of dryness and light. "I don't know who I'm dealing with anymore. I feel like you've just pulled the carpet from under me." He was looking at me. "All because I found the dead woman," Pransky said, "or because Mirabelle has started going mad." "Quirrenbach," I said, "I need to know of places where someone might buy snakes, probably not far from here."
"Did you hear anything of what we just said?"
"I heard," I said. "I just don't want to talk about it right now."
"Tanner,"
Zebra said, then stopped herself, "or whatever you say you are. Does this business about your name have anything to do with what the Mixmaster told you?"
"That wouldn't by any chance be the same one you visited with me, would it?"
It was Chantrell speaking now, and it was all I could do to nod, as if in that gesture I made my final acceptance of the truth.
"I know some local snake sellers," Quirrenbach said, almost to ease the tension.
He leant forward, over Zebra's shoulder, and fed orders into the car. It lifted smoothly, quickly spiriting us above the stench and chaos of the rain-sodden mulch. "I had to know what was wrong with my eyes," I told Chantrell, "why they seemed to have been tampered with genetically. What the Mixmaster told me when I returned with Zebra was that the work had probably been done by ultras, and then undone, crudely, as it happened, by someone else, someone like the black geneticists."
"Go on."
"That wasn't quite what I wanted to hear. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but it wasn't to find out that I must have been in some way complicit in the act."
"You think you willingly did this to your eyes?"
I nodded. "It wouldn't be without its uses. Someone with an interest in hunting, perhaps, might consider it. I can see very well in the dark now."
"Who?"
Chantrell said.
"Good question," Zebra echoed,
"but before you answer it, what about the full body scan you had when we visited the Mixmaster? What was the significance of that?"
"I was looking for evidence of old injuries," I said,
Both wounds were inflicted at about the same time. I was rather hoping to find one and rather hoping not to find the other.
Any particular reason why?
Tana Mirabel had a foot shot off by Ryvich's gunmen. The foot could have been replaced by an organic prosthesis, or a cultured copy cloned from his own cells. But either way, it would need to be surgically attached to the stump. Now, maybe with the best medical skills available on Yellowstone, that kind of work could be done invisibly, but not on Sky's Edge. There'd be plenty of microscopic evidence, signs which should have easily shown up in a Mixmaster scan.
Zebra nodded, accepting that much. Maybe that's true. But if you're not Tanner, as you claim, how do you know it ever happened to him?
Because I seem to have stolen his memories.
Geeta dropped to the floor of the tent at almost the same moment as Kaweya. Neither of them made much of a sound. Geeta had died, in as far as it mattered, the instant the beam from my weapon reached into her skull and turned her brain tissue into something resembling funereal ash. Barely enough of it to cup in your hands and watch slipping in grey streams between your fingers. Her mouth opened slightly wider, but I doubted that she'd had any time to register my actions before thought itself failed. I hoped, devoutly, that the last thing Geeta thought, literally, was that I was about to do something which would save her. As she fell, the gunman's knife etched deeper into her throat, but by then there was nothing left of her capable of feeling pain. Kaweya, impaled by the beam which should have spared Geeta and killed the guard, exhaled softly, like the last sigh of someone falling gratefully into sleep. He had lost consciousness with the shock of the beam's passage, a small mercy for him. The gunman lifted his face to me. He did not understand, of course. What I had done had made no conceivable sense. I wondered how long it would take before he realized that the shot which had killed Geeta, with such geometric precision, bored straight through the forehead, had in fact been intended for him. How long would it take him before he realized the simple truth, which was that I was not quite the crack shot I had dared to imagine, and that I had killed the one person I was striving to save? There was a moment of strained silence, during which time he might have come halfway to that realization. I did not give him time to finish the journey. And this time, I neither missed nor stopped shooting when the task was obviously done. I emptied an ammo cell into the man, and kept firing until the barrel was a cherry-red glow in the tent's dim light. For a moment I stood with three ostensibly dead bodies at my feet. Then some soldiering instinct snapped into play and I moved again, assimilating what I could. Kaweya was breathing, though profoundly unconscious. I had reduced the Ryvich gunman into an object lesson in cranial anatomy. I felt a spasm of remorse, guilt at having taken his execution well beyond any sensible limit. It was, I suppose, the last twitch of a dying professional soldier. In the exhaustion of that ammo cell, I had crossed some threshold into some less clinical realm where there were even fewer rules, and where the efficiency of a kill counted for infinitely less than the measure of hatred expended. I put down the gun and knelt closer to Geeta. I had no need of the medical kit to tell she was dead, and irretrievably so, but I did it anyway, running the pocket neural imager across her head, watching as the little embedded screen turned red with messages of fatal tissue damage. Deep cerebral injury, extensive cortical trauma. Even if we had a trawl in the tent, it would not have been able to skim her memories and thereby capture a ghost of her personality. I had ensured that she was too severely harmed for that. That the very biochemical patterns themselves were lost. I kept her alive, anyway, strapped a life support cuirass across her chest, and watched as it gave light to the notion she was dead, color flowing back into her cheeks as blood circulation resumed. It would keep her body intact until we got back to the reptile house. Kaweya would kill me if I did anything less than that. I turned to him, finally. His injuries were almost trivial. The beam had cut through him, but the pulse had been extremely brief and the beam width at its narrowest focus. Most of the internal damage would have been caused not by the beam itself, but by the explosive vaporization of water trapped in his cells, a series of tiny scalding concussions tracing the beam path. Kaweya's entrance and exit wounds were so small they were hard to find. There should not be any internal bleeding, not if the beam had cauterized as it gnawed through him, as I intended. There would be harm, yes, but I had no reason to suppose he would not survive, even if the best I could do for him here was maintain his current coma with another cuirass. I strapped the device on, left him resting peacefully next to his wife, then grabbed the gun, palmed in a fresh ammo cell and secured the perimeter again, supporting myself with the improvised crutch of another rifle, trying not to think about what had been done to my foot, while knowing, on a level of abstract detachment which was anything but reassuring, that it was nothing that could not be fixed, given time. It took me 5 minutes to satisfy myself that the rest of Ryvich's men were dead, as were almost all of our own except for Kaweah and myself. Dieterling was the only lucky one of us, the only one who had taken a minor wound. It looked worse than it was, and because the head-grazing shot had put him into unconsciousness, the enemy had assumed he was dead. An hour later, close to collapse myself, blackouts fogging my vision like the awesome thunderhead which had preluded the night's storm, I managed to get Kaweah and his wife into the vehicle. Then I managed to get Dieterling awake, though he was weak and confused by blood loss. At times, I remember, I screamed aloud because of the pain. I slumped into the control seat of the vehicle and started it moving. Every part of me was fighting an agonized war to drag me into sleep, but I knew I had to move now and start moving south before Ryvich sent another attack squad, something he would surely consider if the last squad failed to return on time. Dawn seemed an eternity away, and when, finally, pinkish daylight oozed over the now cloudless seaward horizon, I had already hallucinated its coming a dozen times. Somehow, I got us back to the reptile house. But it would have been better for everyone if I had never made it.